This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. It is the best bits of today's show from Wednesday, June the 7th, and the blockbuster breaking business news overnight was that LIV Golf of Saudi Arabia has done a deal with the rival European and American golf tours. It's a multi-billion dollar deal, and we're going to get some more detail on that. What else can I tell you? Alex Golden has been joining us in the studio from Careem. He's global head of food, talking about the controversy over their Dirhams for Delays campaign. We've been speaking to Mohammed Ali Rashid Luta, president and CEO of Dubai Chambers. And we cross live to Saudi Arabia to speak to our own Tom Urquhart, who is in the Saudi capital. All that to come. Thanks for all your messages this morning. Loads of them coming in on, including the LIV Golf merger with the European and American golf tours. No name on this one, but the message is a good one. Amazing what a few billion dollars does to change people's ethical stand. I guess the PGA, that's the American tour, no better than those that initially signed with LIV, the golfers. He says, she says, I'm for it. But it is a punch in the face to those who went out of their way to support the PGA and oppose LIV. Thanks very much indeed for that. Also getting messages in about rising interest rates. Australia yesterday raising rates. India will decide tomorrow on interest rates. Gary is saying, with the rising cost of living and rising mortgage repayments, I'm thinking that single income families are going to start needing a second income to cope with those higher mortgage payments. Thank you very much indeed for that one. Also, Brandy, lots of messages coming in about the Careem promotion.
Yeah, indeed. So it's been about a month since Careem started its Dirhams for Delays campaign, basically offering to pay a dirham for every minute that a food delivery was later than they expected it to be. It's a campaign that has seen quite a bit of controversy online. It has seen a bit of pushback from people. And in fact, if I look at the messages that we've got this morning, people worried what it means for safety for the drivers, the captains, as Careem called them. And Alex has been very vocal in the media, and I know he spoke to Georgia when the campaign first launched on the agenda, about what they were doing to make sure that the drivers themselves didn't know the, you know, sort of the time limit, if you like, the expected delivery time that have been put on things. They've got a different app, so they don't know the money, if there are any delays, comes from Careem pocket, not the driver, etc., etc., to try and reassure people over the safety. But it has turned into a bit of media war of words, as other delivery companies, such as Talabat, has waded in to say what they think of their campaign. Careem has hit back about, you know, how we treat our drivers versus you, etc., etc. And the reason that we got Alex in this morning was because we were wondering, once you've got headlines about delivery wars and spats and, you know, people slamming other people or hitting back or whatever it happens to be, does anybody win? And does the idea, no such thing as bad publicity, etc., still hold? And so we were interested in the fallout from not just the campaign, but that war of words, if you like, and whether or not Careem had any regrets for the campaign in the first place and what has come out as a result. Alex Golden is the global head of food. He was in the studio and we asked him what the war of words meant for the industry as a whole. What was its impact?
I think in the press, using words like wars and whatnot, certainly it catches the attention of people. We don't see it as a war. We see it as us focusing on what we know we do better. And I think competition is a great thing. It encourages us all to be better. And end of the day, the consumer's the winner.
Now, there you go. Full interview with Alex at 20 past nine this morning.
Other stories that we're looking at this morning, including the crypto crackdown in the United States. We've had the SEC launching a lawsuit against Coinbase, which is the number two exchange. Earlier on this week, it's had some words to say about Binance as well, which is the world's number one crypto exchange. Gary Gensler has been speaking to CNBC. Who's he? Well, he is with the Securities and Exchange Commission, and he was talking about the need to regulate cryptocurrency exchanges.
These trading platforms, they call themselves exchanges, are commingling a number of functions, which in traditional finance, we don't see the New York Stock Exchange also operating a hedge fund, making markets.
And at the same time, we had Joe Biden launching an investigation into cryptocurrencies to look at the pros and the cons of the growth of cryptocurrencies. We didn't hear from Joe Biden, but we did hear from Brian Deese. Now, he is with the National Economic Council, so he works for Joe Biden. This was him explaining why.
We need a comprehensive all-of-government framework to address the emerging risks and opportunities that digital assets pose. And the financial innovation underlying and the technological innovation underlying this boom has a lot of potential benefit, but the risks and the costs are increasingly becoming apparent, and we need a 21st century government structure to actually address this.
Surprisingly, cryptos, despite those developments, doing okay this morning. Bitcoin back at $27,000 a Bitcoin. Ethereum close to 1900.
The crypto's doing okay, but the stocks of people like Coinbase not doing okay, down 12% yesterday. And Binance seeing, and I've got the number here, nearly $800 million in assets being taken off its platform in 24 hours. Ironically, this is a bigger version of a debate that we've had on the Business Breakfast, which is your crypto a currency, is it a commodity, or is it a security? Because at the very base of the SEC's argument, they're basically saying you're a security and you need to be regulated like a security. Don't just get to do what you want.
And Binance is in the crosshairs. I was looking at the rankings of the top crypto exchanges, and FTX, we know, which was number two, is now gone. I think Binance is doing $10 billion turnover, Coinbase, number two, doing about $1 billion. So there's a big gap between number one and number two, but both of them being sued by the SEC at the moment. The SEC accuses Binance of making billions of dollars while placing investors' assets at significant risk. So there's a court filing from the SEC in the United States. It accuses Binance of mixing billions of dollars in customer funds and secretly sending them to a separate company controlled by its founder and chief executive, Changpeng Zhao, or CZ, as he's known. You've got Gribber Grewal from the SEC saying the following: we allege that Zhao and the Binance entities not only knew the rules of the road, but they also consciously chose to evade them and put their customers and investors at risk. And of course, yeah, we have a dog in this fight, don't we? Because Binance has a base in Abu Dhabi. And we met CZ down at Abu Dhabi Global Market just a few months ago. So we'll be watching this one closely. And the Winklevoss twins just this week, and they're getting a bit of heat from regulators as well. They're setting up in the UAE. I know myself and producer Mohammed have been chasing Cameron and Tyler around the world to try and get them to talk to us. Hopefully later on this week or next week, they will. But there's a lot going on in the world of crypto.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We do have an Australian in the studio, actually, to speak to us this morning about delivery wars.
Cause baby, now we got bad blood. You know it used to be mad love. So take a look what you've done. Cause baby, now we got bad blood. Hey, now we got problems. And I don't think we can...
The campaign that is making headlines for a number of reasons. Kareem, first sparked debate with its Dirhams for Delays campaign, the move to refund customers a dirham for every minute that a delivery was late, sparked concern online about driver safety. But now we have seen the company positioned in the news as being at the heart of a delivery war with rivals such as Talabat. Very pleased to be joined now by Alex Golden, who's the global head of food at Kareem. Alex, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Tell me first, before we discuss how it all came to this, what you are hoping to accomplish with this campaign.
Well, reliability is something we're proud of. We know we do better. I think every consumer wants their food on time. It's a no-brainer. So we're putting our money where our mouth is and giving dirhams for delays.
And yet, you have created quite the stir. Let's start first with the concerns about driver safety. A lot of it on social media, people worried about the pressure on the drivers. I know that you have come out and said that they don't know what the times are that they are supposed to deliver in. But did you foresee any of this when you guys came up with the campaign?
Look, we, like, our intent certainly is to make it clear that we are the most reliable. In our terms and conditions, we've made it clear that captains aren't involved. And just to clarify that, captains have a separate app. Our riders, we call them captains. Mm-hmm. They have a separate app. All they see is how to get from A to B and how to contact the customer. So they don't know whether they're early, whether they're late. The money comes out of our pocket. So safety is super important to us. We see it quite heartwarming that people are expressing concern. But this is about us and being reliable.
But as people are pointing out here, I mean, the indirect pressure, they might not know the exact time, but if you're doing these routes, you know how long it would normally take. And even just knowing that there's a ticking clock is going to be stressful.
Yeah, look, this isn't about speed. It's about us making promises and keeping promises. What consumers may not know is that the drive time in your total delivery time is only a small portion. It's really about the kitchen preparation. A grill might take 50 minutes to prepare, whereas sushi off the shelf might take 2 minutes. So it's really about promises as opposed to speed.
We're interested more, to be honest, about the knock-on effect for this interview than the mechanics of how you're actually working the delivery. Have you guys sat down within Careem since all of this kicked off and thought, should we still be running this campaign?
Look, we have listened to customers. The campaign is creating noise and it's letting consumers know that we have a reliable service. We are seeing a lot of consumers jumping over and giving us a go. Rather than stopping the campaign, we want to make it really clear that captain wellbeing and safety is at the core of what we do, and we want to stand by having the most reliable service in Dubai.
Well, as a result of this campaign, you've also ended up in a bit of a spat with your rivals in the press. I've got a couple of the headlines here. Careem calls out Talabat for rider safety, low pay and working conditions is one. Careem goes to war with Talabat. Where's another one we've got here? Internet. We've got other bits of press talking about delivery wars and the wars of the delivery companies. What's the benefit of sparring publicly about who pays drivers more and who treats them best with your rivals?
I think it's important that there is transparency. Captain wellbeing is super important, making sure that they earn a fair wage, that they have the flexibility to work when they want. These are things we're proud of. And I think by being open and transparent, it encourages all of us to up the bar and raise our game. And I think that's a really good thing.
But calling out your competitors in public, though, is it a good look?
Look, when asked questions, we're honest. So we want to be clear about what we do, and our focus is making sure that captains are safe, are treated well, and have the flexibility to work when they want.
Does anyone win here?
I think the captain does and the consumer does. We're giving people choice. We're making it clear for captains what our platform entails, and we've seen many want to jump across. But I think when we're speaking openly in public about these things, it encourages all of us to do better. And we think that's a great thing.
So how has it encouraged you to do better? How has it changed the way? Has any of this made you reflect on how you work with your riders, what their KPIs are, how you deal with them?
Yeah, so we don't have them give them KPIs by any means. It has changed for this campaign specifically, what we communicate to our captains. But in terms of what we pay them, the flexibility that they get, we know it's the best in Dubai and we're standing by it.
Is there anything you'd have done differently with hindsight with this campaign?
No. We're proud of what we're doing. We think it's a great thing that consumers are voicing their concern, but it's on us to clarify why things are like this. I think one point to clarify, and in terms of the argument over speed and accuracy, reliability, a core difference that that we have is we make sure that when your food is coming out of the kitchen, there's a captain waiting. Some other players delay this. And what a lot of listeners may not know is that some are delivering multiple orders at once. We have one captain, one order. So experiencing these delays on other platforms is often a result of delivering multiple orders at once, which means your food's more likely to be late, it's more likely to be cold.
And what effect do you think it has on the industry? Headlines about delivery wars and one company calling out another. What does it mean for the good of the industry as a whole?
Yeah, look, I think in the press, using words like wars and whatnot, certainly it catches the attention of people. We don't see it as a war. We see it as us focusing on what we know we do better. And I think competition is a great thing. It encourages us all to be better. And end of the day, the consumer's the winner.
So 1 minute left with you, Alex. So quickly, what has it actually meant for you in terms of business, though, this campaign? Has it increased orders?
Yeah, it has. I can't give away numbers, but what we're seeing is a lot of consumers are jumping across to give us a go. Like I said, we know we have the best reliability, so they're sticking around. And another reason they're sticking around is our subscription program. So a lot of jumping over and actually giving that a go too, which means for a small fee, they can have unlimited deliveries on food, grocery, discounts on rides. So all in all, we're seeing great adoption.
Alex Golden is the Global Head of Food at Careem. They are the people behind the Dirhams for Delays campaign. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk about business a little bit closer to home. Muhammad Ali Rashid Luter is the President and CEO of Dubai Chambers, and he joins us now on the line. Thank you very much indeed for being with us, sir.
Morning.
So, Dubai Chamber of Commerce registering 15,000 new members in the first quarter of 2023. Talk me through the story behind the numbers.
Well, this number reflects the positive increase in business in Dubai. We noticed a very high interest from either local markets or international investors to come into the city and set up their businesses. The number reflects a growth of 48% compared to quarter one of 2022. This is very positive for the economy, and we hope to see further growth in the next quarters.
What is the net gain? Of course, you've got 15,366 new members. Great stuff. How many members did you lose? How many companies shut down or left town?
Well, the way we look at it is that is it a positive indicator or negative? So is the net positive? So the net is already exceeded our forecast by more than 30%. So usually for the last 2 years post-COVID, always we had a net positive when it comes to new members coming in compared to some businesses that might either descale or shut down. But we noticed a very significant growth in the last quarter. So compared to what we forecasted internally based on the 2 years historical data, we had more than 30% growth on the forecasted number, which I believe that reflects the a very dynamic growth in the market here in Dubai.
Let's talk about some of the other indicators that you've been measuring at Dubai Chamber. I've been looking at the total value of exports and re-exports reported by members of Dubai Chamber of Commerce. It hit 72 billion during Q2. That's a 17% increase on the previous year. And last year was not a bad year. It was a strong year. Again, what's going on there?
Talking about last year, actually last year was higher than 21 and this year is even higher than 22. So last year was one of the highest compared to pre-COVID. So this reflects the increase of exports and re-export through the city. So it ensures that Dubai is a global hub for export and re-export. It reflects the great efforts that our international offices are doing at Dubai Chamber to help companies to expand into international markets, in addition to attracting more foreign direct investment to use Dubai as a global platform to growth. And on another way, it reflects the country's efforts in easing up the international trade through SEPA agreements and through other free trade agreements and negotiations that happen to ensure that the non-trade barriers are removed, which will definitely reflect in a very positive way an increase of trade and export.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned those SEPA, those economic agreements that the UAE is signing at the moment. Of the 15,000 new members that you acquired in the first quarter of this year, can you give me some kind of breakdown in terms of, are they international companies that are moving into Dubai? Are they local startups? Are they SMEs, or are some of them large companies? What can you tell us about the breakdown?
Majority of the companies that set up more than 95% are SMEs. More than 70 to 80% of them are international investors coming into the city. Majority of them are SMEs coming from abroad, which is very positive because, you know, along with SMEs, you get more entrepreneurship and more innovation. And always economies that have a big base of SMEs, it helps to increase the entrepreneurship in the city. So summarizing this, it will be more of international SMEs coming into the city, using Dubai as a launch pad to test their innovation and start their entrepreneurial projects here.
And in terms of competition, obviously, those companies, Saudi Arabia would be delighted to host them. Abu Dhabi, Sharjah, I'm sure, will be delighted to host them as well. How do you stay competitive?
Well, I think Dubai always been very competitive for long years now. So always in Dubai, we have programs on a city level and even on Dubai Chamber level to ensure that we have a very dynamic policy reforms that will increase the friendliness of the business environment. And if you look at the strategic pillars of Dubai Chamber, you'll find that one of the six main strategic pillars that we have is to have a friendly business environment. Always we ensure that we are at the top of the game to provide the best infrastructure, both soft and hard infrastructure, that will enable not only business to start here, to even grow through the city. So one of the things that we always look at is how can we retain and ensure further success for companies who come from abroad or either domestic companies to stay, to have a very long life in the economic cycle here in the city.
The voice of Mohammed Ali Rashid Luta, President and CEO of Dubai Chambers. Thank you very much indeed. Shukran jazilan and mubarak on those figures, 15,000 new members.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
We cross live to Riyadh, where Tom Urquhart told us he was out there for a Ministry of Economy event, but we now know he was there to broker the biggest surprise deal in the history of golf. Come together.
Yeah, I'd love to take a little bit of the credit for that one, but I think it was just more happenstance and coincidence that saw me arrive here just around about the same time that this story was breaking. But what a story, and literally one that nobody saw coming. I certainly saw it, didn't see it coming, and I've been following the world of golf for many, many years. Immediately spoke to a number of people very close to the matter and close to the game. They didn't see it coming as well. Judging by the reaction from the players as well that we're getting, a number of players on the tour, well, the sort of surprise turning to anger for a lot of those that missed out on the tour and the opportunity to play with Liv. They didn't see it coming as well. So as much brandy as I'd like to claim a little bit of the credit, I can 100% put my hands up on this one and say I had absolutely no idea that this would happen.
Is it good for golf, Tom?
It's good for golf, Brandy, yes. It is good for the game of golf. Let's look at it from a couple of different angles. And you're right, I'm down here in Riyadh. It was part of the discussions throughout the course of the evening yesterday, and a big sort of sense of positivity coming out of the community here. The reason being, and again, I spoke to a couple of people close to Live Golf, close to the PIF last night. No, Liv, PIF, they've never made any qualms or any secret of the fact that they wanted to be involved in golf in one way or another. They wanted to be involved with the PGA. They wanted to be involved with the former European Tour. That didn't happen, so they set up their own entity. It has come to fruition. It's good for golf fans, but we haven't heard the last of this one. We've got a massive golf tournament just around the corner in the US Open, and a lot of players will be forced to comment about this one. A lot of players find themselves in very uncomfortable positions, given the comments that they've made about Liv in the past, and none more so than Jay Monahan, the chief of the PGA, who literally couldn't say the word Liv Golf or PIF for the last couple of years. But all of a sudden, as a result of what we understand was some good lunches in Venice and a couple of rounds of golf in London, things have changed. I told you that lunch can change everything.
But also some money, Tom. There's some really big sums being hinted at here, aren't there?
Look, goes without saying. We're talking about Liv Golf here. One of their premises was prize money. It was the money that they were offering the players, and that's what attracted some of the biggest names in golf. And there will be no doubt that this is that part of this deal is money into the PGA and of course the DP World Tour. And a word for DP World Tour as well, because, you know, we here on the Business Breakfast have spoken to the team at DP World in the past, and they were always very open about talking about the deal with Liv and the issues with Liv Golf in the past, because they were looking sort of broker some sort of understanding. Money will have played a part without a shadow of a doubt. What will be interesting is to see how in this new this new look tour that we're going to see come into effect next year, how that is going to incorporate A, the purses that we've seen at Liv Golf, and B, the team formats as well that have also been brought in. We've been told that they are going to be incorporated. How remains to be seen.
What does it mean for the economy of Saudi Arabia as a whole? I mean, you were in a room last night with some people who are investing some serious money into building businesses in the kingdom. What did they think about the wider knock-on effects?
The knock-on effects are only positive, and that's one thing that's really struck me here yesterday, apart from the fact that I got the opportunity to watch you and Richard first thing this morning. And again, that reminded me that I need to have a shave more often because we've got a very large audience, not just across the UAE. But in terms of the vision, and how often do we say last night in this the business awards about, you know, Vision 2030 and the move towards that, etc. But the scale of things here, the scale of investment, and not just the impact that they want to have for Saudi Arabia, but the impact they want to have around the world is very, very relevant. A lot of excitement, a lot of positivity, a lot of optimism, and all being funneled in towards the Saudi economy, the wider regional economy, and of course, the global economy. And that, of course, has been, you couldn't ask for a better indication of that by the arrival of Antony Blinken, the US Secretary of State, yesterday. Meetings with the Crown Prince in Jeddah late yesterday, that affected some of the guests that were meant to be at our event, had to jump on a flight and get over to Jeddah. Blinken up to Riyadh today as well to continue those trade sorts. And that was one of the big phrases that I heard from very high-ranking CEOs yesterday. Let the trade begin. So if you thought that trade was booming at the moment, with renewed links with the United States and other partners around the world, that phrase, let the trade begin, quite something.
Well done, Tom, for rising to our background challenge this morning. Our earlier cross with Tom saw him in his hotel room with an unmade bed behind him. He's put on a jacket, had a shave, and headed down to the lobby. Thank you for that. How full's your hotel, Tom? What's your sense of how busy it is humming along there in Riyadh?
As I said a little bit earlier on, I have been struck by just how busy Riyadh is at the moment. And I know that's not going to be any surprise to all those that come to Riyadh on a regular basis. And a lot of our listeners do. But the fact that the traffic is, I have to get to the airport now. We have to leave 3.5 hours before the flight just in order to make the airport because of the early morning traffic. They see that in the evening as well. Hotel is full. The streets are busy. It's just booming. And as I said, it has really struck me because it's been quite some time since I've been to Riyadh. I've done Al Ula a couple of times in recent years. But yeah, there is a real sense of positivity here at the moment. And it's interesting as well, because part and parcel of the conversation, a lot of people here, a lot of people in the room last night, a lot of people I've been speaking to since I've been here, have spent time in Dubai. And it goes without saying, there's always going to be that comparison, isn't there? You know, how's it, you know, what is it like living here? Is it, how's it compare, etc.? And again, no grumbles, positivity.
Well, our well-placed man in Riyadh this morning, golf correspondent Tom Urquhart. Safe flight home. See you soon.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.